Right, so welcome to the lecture three of Introduction to Psychology. First we go through what we studied last week. We talked about social cognition in general, and especially we focused on the theory of mind. I hope you remember what it is. This ability of humans to read others' mind, which is quite difficult to do, and we went through the concept of false belief task, right? You remember what it is. It is the ability of humans to read others' minds, even when what they have, I mean, what the other people have in mind is different from the objective fact. That's when you have a false belief and you are actually able to read others' mind. And do you remember these special children who can't do this kind of task? What's the name for that? These kind of conditions? Yeah, it's called autism, right?
Autism,
yeah. Autistic children cannot, in general, conduct this task. And I wonder, we went to the discovery of mirror neurons, right? Which is probably the most important discovery in cognitive neuroscience in the last 10 years, which is quite much. And we went then on to the concept of contingency. I hope you remember this concept. Very important concept, contingency. And I guess we kind of stopped there. So today we continue this exploration of the basic fundamental aspects of social cognition. And today we focused on the mirror metaphor. We'll first study this concept, mirror test. Now, how many of you have heard about mirror test? A mirror test? It is not a test to see if somebody is narcissistic or not by, you know, measuring the number of seconds he or she spends each morning in front of the mirror. That's not the mirror test. A mirror test was devised by American psychologist Gallup to test the existence of self-awareness in animals and humans. Now, self-awareness or self-consciousness is a very difficult thing to measure or to verify the existence of. I believe that most of you guys here in this classroom are self-conscious, right? You are self-conscious, right? You have self-consciousness, right? Self-awareness or sense of the self. You feel as if you are special within this universe. You are here and now. You are not there and then. You are not here and now, and you are a special person. You are concerned with your own welfare more than anything else in the world, right? Of course, you care for these poor people in Africa. You care for these casualties in the train accident this week. But above all, you are concerned with yourself, right? Whether you can pass the exam, whether you can, go out with this handsome fellow or, you know, beautiful girl or whatever. So you have this self-consciousness. Now, it is such a natural thing for human beings, self-consciousness. Or in Japanese, jiishiki, right? So that we take it almost grounded that, you know, agents have this special ability or property of the mind. But it is an empirical and theoretical question, whether animals also possess self-consciousness. Now, I want to take my first survey this in this class. How many of you think or believe that animals other than us, you know, Homo sapiens, human beings, have self-consciousness? How many of you believe that animals have self-consciousness? About half, okay. Now, you with this very teacher, why do you think animals have self-consciousness? What are the reasons to believe? Intuition?
Not sure. I just thought so.
So it would be nice to say that animals have self-consciousness. Roy, do you have any ideas? Yeah, I kind of called your name, so sorry. What do you think animals have self-consciousness?
They are concerned with their own welfare.
That's right, yeah, sure. So being concerned with his or her or its own welfare might be a very good evidence that it has self-consciousness. But do you think it's enough?
I think it's part only.
Yeah, it's only part of it, right? Yeah.
I don't think they have a self-image.
Yeah, but you kind of raised your hands, right? So I will put it another way. If you are given a very strange species of animals from Malaysia, for example, and you want to test whether this animal has self-consciousness or not, how would you test it? I mean, what kind of test would you take put the animal through?
Put it in front of a mirror.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, okay, so, well, probably go straight to it then. Okay, what is a mirror test? This was invented by Gallup, American psychologist, and it is exactly aimed to test whether animals are capable of being self-conscious. Now, what do you do with the mirror test? Well, first you put the animal in front of the mirror, but with a very special treatment, which is you put some mark on the animal's forehead, for example. Some part that cannot be seen directly. You know, some part of the body that can only be seen with the help of the mirror. You put a red mark, and then you put the animal in front of the mirror. Now, if the animal knew that the image reflected in the mirror was the image of himself or herself, then the animal would examine himself, Can you imagine that? Yeah, I mean, you put some red stuff on the forehead, right? And if the chimpanzee realizes that the image in the mirror is himself, he would examine it. Otherwise, he might think that the image in the mirror is some other individual of the same species. So he might want to kind of, want to be nice or well. So this is the idea of mirror test. Now, what happens when chimpanzees are put in front of the mirror? This is a fact. Actually, they are capable of recognizing the self-image in the mirror. But first, because in the wild, there are no mirrors, right? Chimpanzees do not know what to do when they are first confronted with mirrors. So they actually exhibit social behavior trying to take some action towards the other individual, which is apparently, in front of him, trying to kind of, be frightening or whatever. And in some cases, the chimpanzee might actually go behind the mirror to see whether other individual is hiding or something like that. But as time goes by, this happens within a few days. The so-called self-directed actions increase. Self-directed means that the animal wants to examine himself with the help of the mirror. Here, the guy is kind of, examining his nose, right? I don't know what he's up to. Anyway, interestingly, the time spent in front of the mirror is maximum during the transition period. As I said, this can take a few days, right? But the time being spent in front of the mirror is maximum in the transition period. It is believed that within this transition period, very dramatic change is happening in the brain. Well, I give you the handout. I always forget to give you the handout. Now, what kind of conclusions can we draw from this data? This is a very important data. Do you have any ideas? Okay, I will put you a very specific question. What do you think is happening within the chimpanzee's brain during this transition period? You understand, right? First, the chimpanzee is kind of exhibiting social behavior, as if the mirror is, you know, showing other individuals' image. Then the chimpanzee realizes that it is actually his or her own image and starts exhibiting self-directed behavior. Now, what do you think is happening within the transition period? Can you take a wild guess or, you know, intuition or whatever? Anybody, what do you think is happening? What kind of information is useful in recognizing that the image in the mirror is actually the reflection of your own image? Yes? It's self-obvious, isn't it? I mean, it's not that difficult question to ask, you know. It's, sorry?
From the action.
Yeah, you take an action,
yeah.
Then what happens?
And then the one in the mirror will do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe the other guy is imitating him, yourself, the more simple, you know, hypothesis would be that it is actually the same as your own action. So it is actually called sensory motor contingency. You remember this concept, contingency? It is something that lies between regular and random, right? If you remember, contingency is somewhere between random and regular. And as he said, you know, when you do something in front of the mirror, the image in the mirror is very, 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 very contingent on your own action. Meaning, whatever you do, the image in the mirror does exactly the same thing. So there's a kind of complete mapping between your own action and the sensory feedback that you get from the mirror image. So, you know, of course you guys realize that it is the image in the mirror is your own image reflected. But it takes a few days for the chimps to realize that, you know, that contingency. But they are able to do that. If you, can I have, yeah, it's good. Is there any left for me? Because I need to, if you take a look at this video, this sensory motor contingency is actually taken care of in the parietal lobe. Can you find it? On the figure right, on the right side? Parietal lobe, on the top of your head. That's where some men become bald at some age, you know, parietal lobe, yeah. Anyway, I'm not talking about baldness here. It's called Tochoyo in Japanese. So that's where it all happens this accounting for contingency between sensory input and motor output in the parietal, which kind of makes a chimpanzee realize that the mirror image is himself. Now, I have written the answer already here, but only humans, chimpanzees, orangutans, and dolphins can pass the test. Which is rather surprising, isn't it? Only four animal species can pass the mirror test. Other animals are not able to recognize that the image reflected in the mirror is him or herself. For example, you would think that gorillas, you know, why not gorillas? You know, so these animals fail the mirror test. For example, gorillas. Isn't it rather surprising that gorillas fail the mirror test? There are some, you know, explanations, possible explanations for the fact that gorillas cannot pass the mirror test. So, well, I will ask this guy. Can you stand up, please? Can you go there? Sorry. I would like to you to act like a gorilla. How can you act like a gorilla? What would you do if you were a gorilla?
What would you do?
Can you come here? Okay, if you guys are two male gorillas, you know, male mature gorillas, and if you are in the jungle and you encounter each other, what would you do? I mean, can you kind of guess what a gorilla-like action would be? Now, there's something very important here. Wait, we can go on. Okay, please observe the action of these two guys. No, you still go. Still going on. Please observe the action of these two guys. Now, they are actually showing exactly what wild gorillas do. Which is, can you guess? It is about eye contact. Eye contact. You know eye contact, right? Yeah, they are not, you know, yeah, sure.
Shy?
Yeah, what happens when you're shy about, you know, eye contact? You know what eye contact is? You look at the other guy's eye, into the other guy's eye. What happens? What is happening here? These are gorillas, right? So.
Start fighting?
Yeah, they. Well, you can. You guys can start fighting if you like. But, if you are shy, what happens? Yeah, it actually happens to humans too. When you are shy, sorry.
I don't think you
can see
the other person's
eye. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. They avoid eye contact. Wild gorillas. Thank you. You can return your seat. Wild gorillas avoid eye contact. That is probably the reason why gorillas do not pass the mirror test. Because, you know, when they are put in front of the mirror, gorillas do not want to look into the mirror because that means eye contact with yourself, of course, but you cannot, you don't know actually if it's you or other individual of the gorilla. Yeah, you get the point? So, gorillas avoid eye contact.
I have a question.
Sorry? Yeah.
So gorillas are more shy compared to chimpanzees and orangutans. Is that what you're saying?
Well, shy is a kind of a, you know, projecting human condition onto animals. So we do not know why gorillas avoid such eye contact. So we can stay shy, but we cannot really say that shyness is the exact, you know, appropriate word to describe gorillas' social interactions, but it is the fact that gorillas avoid eye contact in social situations. So that might actually explain why Goliath failed the mirror test. Now, you might also say that, have you kept love verse, succeeding love verse? Love verse. Love verse is a kind of parakeetos. Parakeetos. You've noticed that some, you know, birds, pet birds, are very good at using the mirror. Like, you know, I used to keep a love bird. It comes from Australia. I don't want to draw it because I'm not very good at, you know, this kind of, you know, you get the general idea. Love birds. You know what it is, right? Now, these birds are very good at using the mirror to see places where they cannot see directly. So if you put a mirror in front of the bird, it will be able to see food hidden here. So these birds are able to see, you know, to use the mirror as an aid to see places. But they cannot actually use the mirror to recognize him or herself. So that's something different. It is said that mirrors, elephants are also good at using the mirror as a way to discover things which they cannot see directly. But elephants are not always able to, you know, pass the mirror test. So passing the mirror test requires something special. Only four species can pass it. Now, this of course does not mean that, of course we know that humans have self-consciousness, right? There's little doubt about it, but you know, it is not sure that if these other three animal species, chimpanzees, orangutans, dolphins, have self-awareness. It is an open question. Now, the dolphin experiment was conducted a few years ago in California. And what they did was, you know, first they mark the dolphins with harmless, you know, inks. So they kind of, you know, you can imagine the dolphin the swimming in the pool, and the experimenter kind of pats the dolphin like, and then they measure the time that the dolphin apparently spends in front of the mirror looking at these parts of the body which they cannot see directly. You know, these pearls, they can see only with the aid of the mirror. Now, so if you put a mark on body parts, this is the time in seconds. So 600 seconds means 10 minutes, right? Out of 30 minutes, you know, 30 minutes was the total experiment time. So actually, so the dolphins spend almost one third of the time, whole time, to look at images, you know, in the mirror to check whether something is wrong with their own body. So the shell means that the experimenter patted the dolphin's body, but they did not actually put any visible mark or ink on the dolphin's body. So shell meaning that there's no mark. Right? So the dolphins very rapidly realize that even if you pat them, that does not necessarily mean that there's some ink on their body. So after some looking into the mirror, they discover that there's nothing really worrisome about their body. They do not look into their mirror anymore. So this is a very clear evidence that dolphins are actually using the mirror to see parts of their body that cannot be seen directly, and they are also aware that these, you know, pearls belong to their own body, so they are aware that so they actually pass the mirror test. Is the logic clear here? Yes. This was actually done a few years ago, so you can say that this kind of experiment is still at the cutting edge of these, you know, animal cognition studies. if you are interested, you are, if you are dolphin lovers, it will be a nice idea to conduct this kind of test as a postdoc or PhD student or whatever in California. Do you have any questions up to this point about mirror test or yes? Who? Dolphins?
Dolphins or chimpanzees?
You mean within the zoo environment, you mean, or aquarium environment? Yeah, it's possible, but you can also say that lovers or gorillas are also used to mirrors. But even so, they do not pass mirror tests. There was a very interesting study about pygmy marmoset. I don't know how you spell it. Marmoset, you know. Marmosets are very small monkeys, you're like, I don't know how you spell it, marmosets. I think it's spelled like that, marmoset. There was a study about marmosets. Actually, they were kept in a cage where there was a mirror for 3,000 days or so. But even then, marmosets did not learn to, associate the reflected image with their own body. So, even if you put an animal, it's a very good point actually, because you know, if for example, you imagine you guys are studying some animals. Do you want the animals to be dumb, or do you want the animals to be intelligent? You know, if you say that you are studying a rat, you want the rats to be intelligent animals, right? Because otherwise, people wouldn't respect you, right? So, people who are studying animal behavior have a very strong motivation to say that, to boast that their pet animals are very intelligent things. So many researchers actually would like to claim that the animals that they are studying pass the mirror test. So there have been lots of claims that dogs, for example, pass the mirror test, cats pass the mirror test, whatever, pass the mirror test. But after very stringent retesting, re-examination, most of these claims have been found to be false. So there have been many hopefuls who didn't actually make it to the finals. So these four species, the only known species that have made it to the finals. These are the winners. So even if you kind of acquaint an animal very well within the mirror, they actually do not have the ability to recognize themselves. It is a very strange fact, but it is true. Do you have any other questions, comments? Yes? Yeah.
So it's how long an animal stares at the mirror.
Yeah.
How do you know if, like, the dolphin is trying to, is looking at the mark? He doesn't have any
hands. Yeah, pads. That's a very good point.
He doesn't have hands, so he's not, like, touching it or anything.
Right. In the case of chimpanzees, of course, it's clear that because they can be observed, touching at the mark. It is actually a very good question, and I think, Roy, you would make a very good experimental scientist. For this experiment, actually, there were four judges looking at the videotape. And this judgment that the dolphins were looking at the image and, examining themselves were, what made only when the four judges agreed. So, 600 seconds, that's when all four human judges agreed that the dolphin was apparently looking at its own image in the mirror to examine what's happening to the body parts. So, as you said, this is a very subjective experiment still. Because, as you said, dolphins don't have hands, so there's no... You can define by your kind of visual processing that if the dolphin is bending itself within this angle, it's defined as looking at himself or herself. But that was actually not the case, and this experiment was done by four judges. But it was published in the Science magazine, so it was okay. But a very good question, actually. Yeah, so you first, yeah.
Can child pass the blood test?
Can who?
Child.
Oh, that's a very good question. Actually, human children are capable of passing it at the age of two, approximately. So you, if you have a small child, you can test it, or you can probably produce one and test it. Well, yeah. Any other question? Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't really get the graph. Like, what was the early
sham? Sorry, sham meaning, you know, the experimenter put the ink on the dolphin by patting on it, right? Sham means that experimenter patted on it as if they were putting the ink, but actually there were no ink. So sham meaning fake, you know, fake, yeah. So these were fake conditions. So these are, in other words, these are called in the jargon of science, sham. This is a kind of a control experiment. This is one of the important concepts to be gained from, you know, science. Control experiment. You need to have a control experiment. So sham is a control experiment. Do you get that? Oh, now, early and late meaning, sorry, I think you were aiming at that. Early meaning, they put the sham, you know, early in the experimental control. Late sham means that they, you know, towards the end of the experiment, they patted on the dolphin again. Then, as the late sham kind of, you know, made the dolphins kind of uneasy, you know, oh, the experimenter patted me again. Maybe there's something wrong with, you know. So then, dolphin kind of goes out to examine its own body. So there's a difference between early sham and late sham. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Any questions? Other questions? Yes, please.
The animals you mentioned are all advanced mammals.
Yeah.
So, is there any connection with the failure of IQ or and the successful?
Yeah, that's also a very, very good question. What causes animals to be self-conscious? Why advanced mammals like ourselves are, you know, self-conscious? That is a very good question. Now, probably I will come to that later in the lecture when I come. The short answer is that for mammals, social interaction is very important. Not only because you need to have other sex to produce offspring. That's one reason. But more importantly, when you are born, you need the mature individuals, you know, meaning mother, to survive. You know, you need mother-infant relationship to survive. So that puts a very, very, very strong constraint on the social cognition of mammals. You know, mammals cannot be self-sufficient because you know, from the beginning, you need somebody else to survive. So that, puts a lot of evolutionary pressure on ourselves to understand others' mind. Because some mothers are really nasty, you know. Some mothers do not give milk. They just ignore the infants. So as an infant, you really need to know the mind state of your mother. Whether your mother is gonna take care of you or whatever. So that kind of, you know, mother-infant relationship is thought to have put a lot of evolutionary pressure on us to understand others' mind. And actually, self-consciousness and understanding of others' mind, you know, meaning theory of mind, is very much related. I need to write it. So the question was, why mammals? Right? Oops. So the important thing was mother-infant relationship. And here, self-mind and others' mind you need to recognize both of them. And the metacognition, you remember this word, metacognition? It is so that metacognition of yourself mind and others mind kind of co-evolve. They co-develop. So these co-evolve and co-develop. So that's why mirror tests are so interesting, because, you know, mirror tests test self-consciousness as if you are dealing with other people's mind. You know, imagine you are in front of the mirror. It is a very, very strange thing for males. I do not do cosmetic things myself every morning. But I, you know, realized that for girls it is usual to spend some minutes in front of the mirror, right? So I, when I was 16 years old or so, I realized that every girl is a painter. Because, you know, she paints her own face and gets better with it each day. It is amazing. I can't imagine. I sometimes, speak in TV shows, like scientific TV shows, and, you know, it is only them that they do cosmetics on me, but it gives me really creepy, you know, strange feelings. You know, I don't really like being painted on my face. You know, girls are very good at painting their own face. Like, what was I getting to? Yeah, I forgot. So, when you are in front of the mirror, you have very strange feeling, because apparently you are looking at yourself, right? But you also feel that you are kind of projecting your own feeling, your own mind state, onto the image in the mirror. So you are kind of feeling as if you are looking at yourself as you are looking at other people. You get that? You get this strange feeling? So looking at a mirror is in a very strange kind of twilight zone between, you know, self, mind, and others' mind. But I'll come to this very beautiful observation by my colleague, Philip Rocher. He's a very well-known developmental psychologist in U.S. Now, Philip, I don't know if I'm writing his name correctly. Rocher is definitely correct. I'm not too sure about Philip, but he made this observation that, you know, he once was beside a swimming pool, and there was a very small girl, right, on the springboard, tobikomidai, right? And behind the girl, there were bunches of children waiting for her, waiting for the child to spring, jump into the pool. But the girl didn't jump into the pool for quite a while, even though the children behind her were screaming like, "Oh, go on, jump into the water." Why did the girl? Why didn't the girl jump into the pool? That's because, you know, the girl's mother was on the pool side. By the way, this is my own drawing, so it's really clumsy, but forget. You don't have to worry about it. Now, the mother doesn't look at the girl. But the girl would like the mother to jump into the pool, because that's what she has been practicing for some time. And she is very good at jumping into the pool, so she wants her mother to look at it. But the mother doesn't look at her. So for her, actions not observed by the loved ones here, meaning mother, is as good as non-existent. You know, so it is a very, you know, strange thing that, you know, maybe you remember, I don't know, you come from many cultural background, but I can speak about Japanese culture background. When I was a, you know, school, you know, elementary school student, there was sometimes, you know, trained by the children, Gakugeigai, it's called. And you would play some parts, like I was playing the part of the tree or whatever. And, you know, you were very nervous whether your parents were present at the, you know, school play or not. Do you remember these moments? And even if your parents were at the school play, you were very anxious whether they were looking at you, you know, whether they might not be chatting with some other mothers and, you know, not paying attention to you or whatever. Or in the school, you know, sports event, right, 100 meter run, you know, when your turn approaches, you become very self-aware and you kind of start to worry whether your, you know, favorite girl is looking at you or whatever. So you remember these things, right? So for humans, how you are seen by others has a very, very important you know, significance in development. So Philip Rocher thinks that, you know, the so-called peer pressure, for example, plays a very important role in social development. Now, can somebody explain what the peer pressure is? Peer pressure? What is the peer pressure?
Even they don't want to do that, but if the friends do the thing, then follow it.
Yeah, if you don't want it, even if you don't want it, if your friends want you to do it, you do something. Yeah, that's one example of peer pressure. Can you give me some other example of peer pressure? In order to think about peer pressures, you just need to look back on your teenage, low teens days, you know. Because low teens is when the peer pressure is more severe, you know, the most severe and more, you know, most savage. And, you know, low teens, like 13, 14 years old. Can you remember any example of a peer pressure? Yeah, Roy, yeah.
Let's have a cigarette.
Let's have a cigarette, yeah.
And all your friends are doing it, and there's this thing that you have to join them.
So you join them.
Yeah. So there's a pressure from
other. Yeah, because example, yeah. Yeah.
It's a longing to be normal, to be like everybody else.
Yeah, that's what, yeah. So the example that Philip actually gave was, Philip is originally from France, right? So he speaks with some French accent. So Philip's children are boys being seen with their father in front of their, you know, friends, because, you know, they don't want that this very strange French speaking guy is their mother, you know, father, right? You remember these things, right? When you are with your teenage friends, being with your own parents is a lot of pressure. You know, you don't want really to be with your own parents. You remember these moments? Yeah. So that's peer pressure. So you can say that, you know, when we develop these, you know, observation by others, made by others, have a lot to do with the, you know, development of self-mind or self-consciousness. So modern social cognitive science has a lot of emphasis on the interaction between, direct interaction between your own mind and others' mind. You need others' mind to develop your own self-consciousness. You know, your own self-awareness is developed only through the social interaction with others. This is a very important aspect of social cognitive science at present. And there has been a very interesting research recently about the effect of eye contact on your brain. Here's a very attractive girl, attractive scale 5. That's what they said in the paper. They asked the subjects to kind of rank the attractiveness of the person by 5 scales, and this was a scale 5 girl. And, you know, on the top two pictures, the girl is looking at you, right? By the way, this effect happens to female subjects as well as to male subjects. So there's no sexual difference about in this effect. Anyway, what happens is, in the two pictures above, there's eye contact. The girl is making an eye contact with you guys. What happens is the dopamine neurons. Dopamine is the kind of internal reward system. When something happy or something enjoyable or something pleasurable happens, dopamine is released from the neurons in your midbrain. I wonder if I put that. You can see midbrain on the figure left down, left below. That is what midbrain. So you guys have this neuron which releases dopamine in your midbrain, and just making an eye contact with an attractive person activates the dopamine neurons. On the other hand, for the pictures below, the girl is avoiding eye contact. Can you guess what happens to your dopamine neurons in this condition? Yeah, what do you think is happening to your dopamine neuron when you look at the girl like this?
Decrease?
Exactly. Your dopamine neuron activity actually decreases when there's no eye contact. So there's a very actually interesting tendency. As I said, in this experiment, they asked the subjects to rate the attractiveness of the person. Right? And interestingly, when there's eye contact, so if we plot the dopamine activity versus attractiveness, it's like that. So the more attractive you feel the girl is, the more decreased your dopamine neurons would be. And as I said, there is no strong sexual difference. So female subjects' brain behave the same way. So, the other day I was talking with one of the top executives of McDonald's Japan. It was a she, it was a female person. And she said that the most important item in the, kind of how to handle a customer's manual in McDonald's is look into the customer's eyes. That is very, racial when you take this evidence, because it comes very cheap. Smile is nothing. Smile is 0 yen in McDonald's. Yeah? It's in the menu, right? So that is a kind of this kind of neural basis. When you make an eye contact, you just make it just makes you happy. It's very cheap, right? So this kind of research is aimed at the importance of interpersonal interaction in the development of the concept of the self. You really need others' eyes or others' attention to really develop yourself. The worst nightmare for humans as a social being is to be ignored by others. To be ignored by others is the worst thing that can happen to you. do you have any questions up to this point? Do you have any questions up to this point? Yes? No? If you don't have any questions, we'll go to the film section. In this lecture, we are taking a look at some short films to explore the dimensions of social cognition. And today, we are going to see a short film. Can you guess what this is? You know? The Office, yeah. You are the connoisseur in this. We're going to see the film, very short film. The Office. Now, this is what in Britain is called mockumentary. Fly on the Wall. Fly on the Wall comedy. Yeah, mockumentary means that it's a funny film, like a documentary. But it's not really a documentary, it's a comedy. Fly on the Wall. Can somebody explain what a fly on the wall is? Fly on the Wall, yes? Yeah. Fly on the Wall film. What is a Fly on the Wall film? Yeah, that's right. Fly on the Wall film means that it is shot from as if you are looking at the from the standpoint of a fly on the wall. So imagine you are a fly on the wall and you are looking at the situation in this room. That's fly on the wall. Anyway, so what the short film we're going to see is called Keith Appraisal. It's a very funny part of the documentary, but I would like to ask you, what kind of social interactions are involved in this particular scene? It's a portion called Cheese so this guy is Keith, and he's going through an appraisal. What is an appraisal? What is an appraisal? What is an appraisal? appraisal. Sorry?
Evaluation.
Evaluation, yeah. In Japan, Japanese field. So it is a working situation and workplace situation, and his boss is going to give an evaluation of this guy, Keith. Now, this is a very funny scene, and I hope you enjoy it. I wonder if. Can you hear the sound? Yeah. But of course, this is a lecture, so I'd like you to point out what kind of social aspects are involved in this film. Anyway, here we go.
Other strengths.
Oops.
You just put accounts.
Yeah.
That's your job. I mean, that's just. No, Keith. I was sort of looking for your skills within your job. Or is there anything else you could have put there? No. Okay. Under weaknesses, you've put eczema.
We had a fantastically welcoming.
The wine was. Something else,
Yeah. Everyone's. And Tim seems nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good laugh. I just got has he got a girlfriend?
Why?
What's up with him? Why? Would you?
I don't know the
equation. Yeah, I know. But I mean, if you weren't, would he be?
It won't work.
Right, you've left this section completely blank, Keith. You haven't done the Q&A.
I thought that you filled that in.
No. This is aimed at you. To what extent do you believe that you have the skills and knowledge to perform your job effectively? And then you just tick one of the boxes. Not at all. To some extent, very much so. Don't know. What would you tick?
Don't know.
Okay. Two. Do you feel you have received adequate training to use your computer effectively?
What are the options?
Same. They're always the same. Always the same. Not at all. To some extent, very much so. Don't know.
Don't know.
Don't know again. Okay. Do you feel you are given the flexibility to decide how best to accomplish your goals? Do you want the options again?
Yeah.
Not at all. To some extent, always the same. Very much so. Don't know. If don't know wasn't there, what would you put?
Well, the options.
Not at all. To some extent, very much so. Don't know.
Very much so.
Do you remember what the question was?
No.
Okay. Do you miss? We're going to leave that there. Just going to it's not an appraisal. So.
Yeah, this is a very funny film. I would like to keep watching it. But so what else? Why was this scene funny? Can somebody point out the funny elements in this film? Roy? Yeah. Why was this funny? Sorry? The question? Yeah.
He seems to have some social problems.
Yeah? What kind of social problems?
Well, he's chewing the gum.
Yeah? Oh, chewing the gum is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, possible.
It's supposed to be.
Why?
Because it's a work environment and you're talking to your boss.
Right, so chewing the gum is not very good in showing the respect for your boss, right? Yeah, that's a good point, one point. And what else?
He said that all the options are the same.
Yeah.
But he keeps on making the press repeat. So
yeah.
It's either he's stupid.
Yeah.
Or it's kind of hard to tell what his problem is.
Right. So if you psychotherapist, what would you do? I mean. Yeah.
I would sack him.
You would sack him?
Yeah.
Japanese students, do you understand the word sack? Sack meaning fire, could be, right? Let himself go. Probably we will just see some strange scene from this film. Obviously, we cannot see all of them.
Well,
okay.
Go on.
Well, what
problem? We're actually used to doing stuff, like working hard, you know, being motivated. There's not much dynamism out there, is there? No, I mean, people look like they're getting away with murder.
Having a laugh, yes.
Well, I think quite a few of us are bored.
Oh, what you prefer, Swindon? More of a laugh. You're having a laugh saying that. What's so good about Swindon? Neil?
Yeah, for what?
What you prefer Neil to me? Who thinks Neil's more of a laugh than me? Hands up. So, that's mental. Come off it. It's you. We're going to have a drink. Come out for a drink with me and see who's more of a laugh. Yeah, put your money where your mouth is. Right, we'll go for a drink at lunchtime. Right. Right, here we are. Right, it's an outing. Okay, lunchtime. Showing that lot what?
What's that lot like?
Yeah?
Keith?
What are you doing next time? Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. No, purely social. I know someone who is an alcoholic and it is no laughing matter. Particularly for his wife. So, she's got alopecia, so not a happy home life. And their eldest is like that, Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, so oh, that's probably what turned into in the first place. So, looking forward to the weekend?
Yeah.
Cheers. That's a lovely talk about that, so courage. So you get another idea, because the main brewer's in Reading, so although they're doing London and everything, so what's the brewery in Sweden? It might be Courage, actually. It's alright, isn't it? Nice pub, that.
It's a private jet.
Right. I was saying, this is nice. There's a lovely pub near me, and the Gardener's Arms. What? What are you doing?
Oh, it's the bloke over there. It's like someone we know.
Okay. One at a time. Focus, yeah? So you get more out of it in the long run. I promise you that. So I've got what I was saying then. That's what happens when you come on.
3 points?
What?
Immediately.
I'm
not
yeah. Unless you change into a dog.
Well,
that's not your way.
There
isn't a
bottle
there that makes them. Listen, I could be here and I would still get
unrelated.
A
couple of mates of mine are going down to Yates's.
Why not? Classic. Joking.
Well, I was wondering if you would like to come down with us or not. And you, Dawn, you can be me if you like.
Oh, I don't think we.
Okay, but you can come.
Yeah, you can. Thanks.
Okay.
You want tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Just after work or.
Yeah, or I'll have a couple of drinks. Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Okay.
Social interactions captured in here. For example, why is this scene funny? Why?
Because no one else is talking, and all they can do is just watch someone doing something.
who said that? Sorry. Yeah?
If no one else has got nothing to say,
yeah?
Nothing to say, so all they can do is just watch someone eat.
Yeah, this, watch this guy eat, yeah. Of all the persons, right? Yeah. So, what are common, you know, elements in a funny social situation? Do you have any ideas why some social situations are funny? Have you heard about this hypothesis? False alarms. Have you heard about false alarms? Actually, you know, funny situations when there are possibly socially dangerous things are happening. You know, false alarms is said to be the origin of laughter. Actually, this was actually proposed by Charles Darwin. You know Charles Darwin? The great guy, you know, evolutionary theory, origin of species. So, you know, funny situations where actually socially menacing, you know, socially dangerous things are lurking. But you know, it is not that dangerous. It could be dangerous because, you know, you could make somebody angry, or, you know, there could be a social disaster, whatever. But, you know, if the degree of the danger or the degree of the, you know, discrepancy between people are not that much, there's this laughter reaction because, you know, false alarm refers to the fact that, you know, when we were mammals in the wild, and there were people together, and there were sometimes, you know, animals, carnivorous animals like, you know, tigers, lions, and so on. Then Roy would, you know, emit a false, you know, alarm signal, like, right? Roy would make that kind of alarm sound. But after that, Roy discovers that what he thought was a lion was just one of his friends who looked like a lion, right? And then Roy wants to kind of, you know, cancel his alarm signal. That's when Roy kind of laughs, like, to cancel his alarm signal. That's what Charles Darwin thought to be the origin of laughter, you know, false alarm. So, you know, if you've seen this film, and if you have a good sense of humor, and if you have a very good, you know, fairly good command of English, I think you've discovered many of the situations here funny, or possibly funny. But then, these situations are when there are possible danger of outburst of emotion, confrontation, and so on. Well, let's go back to, for example, in this. So, this is a very awkward situation, right? Very awkward situation. Where everybody is silent and you need to. Now, what was happening here? In the scene?
That's what you meant.
Now, what was happening here? Can somebody explain? What kind of interaction was here? Observed here? Roy? Yeah? Well, you're an expert on these things.
There's a dark bullet behind her.
Yeah?
And he's trying to shoot.
What was that? I'm talking about social aspects. You're talking about the physical aspects.
Social aspects?
Yeah.
Well, he's not supposed to do that.
No? No, that's not. That's not the point.
I don't think I got it, though.
No, I thought you were an expert on this. You were an expert. Yeah, well, let's watch again. Now, what?
Get out of the way, too.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks from now, I'll go down to Yates's.
So why not? Classic. Joking.
Well, I was wondering if you would like to come down with us or not. And you, Dawn, you can be me if you like.
Oh, I don't think it would be.
Okay, but you can come.
Yeah, we're coming. Thanks.
Great, okay.
Somewhere tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah,
brilliant. Just, you know, after work or...
Yeah, all right, I'll have a couple of drinks, yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Okay.
Good
Yeah.
See you in a bit, all right.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So, Roy, what?
She's a woman. She liked him first.
Yeah.
But, well, it's kind of like the tension. Well, she came in.
Yeah.
And asked him out. And then, she like, the tension in the room is a bit different. Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's kind of that girl is kind of jealous because the other girl asked him out, right? Yeah, so that's what I wanted to point out. Yeah, so there are all these very subtle social situations. You know, of course, we don't need this kind of film actually to be pointed out that there's you know kind of these social things happening. In humans, and I don't know what we have approximately 15 minutes. I wonder if I should go to, yeah, maybe I will go because, as I said, next week we are going to have the Golden Week. Golden, is it?
Yeah,
no, next week, I have to give this class a miss because I'm going to be in UK meeting my friends, I mean academic friends. So I have to, you know, so next week, that means what day?
No.
Sorry? 11th is there, 11th is no, so next week is 4th. There's no class. 11th, there's no class again because I'm going to take it. 18th, there will be class. So, fourth, this is a national holiday. I don't know what kind of holiday it is. 11th, no class. Sorry. I'll be here. 18th, there will be class.
Are we going on?
So before I go, because so there will be 2 weeks break, right? So before I go, you know, I would like to give you a food for thought, so to speak. Have you heard about Small World Network? Now, we have been talking about social cognition in a very small environment with only a few people involved. But we are living in an internet era, right? Here I have my mobile. I am actually a mobile addict. I send emails all the time, receive emails all the time. You know, I guess most of you are actually email addicts, right? Now, so this is what is called a small world situation. So small world network means, I will explain what a small world network is. It is sometimes called, actually, how many of you have heard about six small world networks? It's a buzzword. You haven't heard about it. You are not actually living in the 21st century. Of course, I'm joking. Now you know what a small world is. Sometimes it's called 6 degrees of separation. It is a claim that starting from you can reach any person in the world by 6 degrees of connection. Meaning, you know somebody, and that somebody knows somebody else, and that somebody knows somebody else. By following that connection, you can actually reach any person in the world.
no matter where, whether he is in Africa, Madagascar, or North Korea, wherever, he can reach that person. This was, you know, this idea actually was born in America. You know, I, as psychologist, conducted an experiment where he tried to, you know, reach a person in a far region in the United States by asking the participants of the experiment to hand a letter to their personal friend. You know, you can hand your letter to persons that you know directly. Then that person kind of guesses who would be closer to the target person and hands the letter again. And the experiment found that actually within approximately 6 degrees of, you know, connection, you can reach anybody in the United States. This is called the small world network. Now, not only in America, all over the world. Now, probably I will go through this, probably we'll come to this concept later, but I know, well, small networks stand somewhere between random network and regular network. You know, in a regular network, you cannot necessarily reach other people within a finite number of steps, because, for example, suppose this kind of regular network, like a checkerboard, right? Suppose there were a billion billion squares. Now, Roy, what kind? How many steps would you take to come from here to here? But it takes more than billion steps, right? More than billion steps. Sorry? Not 2 billion, because there's a root. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, 2 billion is... yeah, actually, it's a 2 billion. Yeah, that's... yeah, exactly, yeah. So it takes 2 billion steps. So in a regular network, you know, people can be as far as the size of the network, right? In a random network, people can be reached very easily. But on the other hand, in a random network, there is no local community. So random network means that within this classroom, you don't know actually exactly what other people are. You know, in a random network, Roy, you can be connected to anybody in the world in a random way. Physical proximity doesn't mean anything in a random network. So you can be connected to people in China, North Korea, in a random way. That's a random network. Now, what we actually have in a small world network is that we do have a small community, right? So we, looking at yourself and around you, you feel as if you are in a small community, right? But actually, you are connected to a very wide, you know, network. This is what's happening with internet, because, you know, you feel as if you just know a few people, right? About 100 people. That's what you think you know. But, you know, if you look at the friends of your friends, right? Your friend has the same number of networks, right? So if you look at these secondary connections, then there's a very broad connection. Then you look at the tertiary connection, there are even more broad connection. So you really don't know what kind of broad world you are actually connecting through the smaller network. And the reason why this is interesting is that a small world network has been found to describe the neural networks of C. elegans. C. elegans is a very small animal, or not an animal, it's called a nematode. It's something that you wouldn't like to be in your food or whatever. C. elegans, right? The C. elegans neural network can be described in terms of small world network. And also, small world networks can describe the co-appearance relationship of Hollywood movie stars. Did you know this database? It is the largest movie database in the world. It's called the Internet Movie Database. And if you go to this site, you can look up who appeared in which film and so on. So, you know, for example, I'm not very good at American films, but suppose Clint Eastwood and Clint Eastwood, or let's say Koyuki, she's a Japanese actor, right? Koyuki appeared in The Last Samurai, right? But I think Clint Eastwood didn't appear in The Last Samurai. Anyway, but if you, so, let's see, if you put Koyuki here, and Clint Eastwood here, actually, is there anybody who are very good at American films? Is there anybody who can actually connect these guys? Like, meaning, Clint Eastwood co-appeared in a film with somebody, and this guy co-appeared in a film with somebody, and so on. Can you actually make this kind of connection? Can anybody?
No.
Sorry. 5 minutes without any database. Okay, so let's start. Yeah. So this is a small world network, and this is the 6 degrees of freedom. It is claimed that on average, you can reach from any Hollywood movie stars to other Hollywood movie star within 6 degrees of connection. While he is still working on it, we'll probably... Now, in mathematics, there's this very famous genius mathematician, Eldest. And Eldest number is very famous, because Eldest number refers to... Well, I'll just show. So this guy wrote many papers with many people. So in the middle, you see Eldest. This, you know, genius mathematician. And these connections show people who have written a paper with Eldest. Now, for example, this guy, Tutte, wrote a paper with Eldest. Now, this guy, Descartes, whatever. Descartes wrote a paper with Tutte, so Descartes is connected to Eldest with 2 degrees of connection. That is said as Eldest number 2. So, I mean, if you know any mathematician friends, ask him about Eldest number. If he knows Eldest number, then he's a real mathematician. But if he doesn't, then he's probably a fake. You know, every mathematician knows about Eldest number. You get what an Eldest number is? You get the concept? Yeah? Yes? So this is also a small world network. So for example, you know, within Waseda University, you sometimes bump into people who you didn't know, but you know mutual friends, like, oh, you know this girl, or, you know, that kind of thing usually happens. That's not surprising because, you know, many human social networks are described by small world networks. we have only 5 minutes, so probably. By the way, I forgot your name. What is your name?
I knew you. Hilden.
Hilden. Yeah, Hilden. So you worked out?
I'm okay.
You're almost done. Great. So can you write? Even if you were in the middle of the process, can you probably go there and write down?
Thank you.
Right, while he's still working at it. So, did you get the concept of small neural network? Yes? Right, so my first assignment, sorry.
Can you go through directors as well?
Not really. Just actors or actresses. Right, so my first assignment is list 10 examples of this is my first assignment. Give list 10 examples of small neural network. Like you can write neural networks or so I'm not asking for very rigorous fact finding. Just use your imagination. Use your imagination and just list, you know. It's a very simple assignment, I guess. So the way to do it is you put your name and do you have your number, registration number or whatever? Yes? So you have your number. Then you put like neural networks. Yeah, this. I gave you three examples, right? Higher film co-appearance. But just use your imagination. So please hand in the assignments on the A4 paper. A4 paper. 18th. Is it 18th? Yeah. Yeah. 18th. May. I will give the highest marks to examples. You know, which is very unexpected. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And you, if you cannot come up with 10, then you can probably just write 3 or 4 or whatever. But just use your imagination. If there's something that is not clear in this assignment, ask now. Sorry? No, you don't have to type it. You can just handwrite it. Does everybody have a registration number or what? How do I? You do have a registration number. Student number. Okay, so write your student number. That's the end of today's class, but I will be in this area, so if you have any questions, please hand in your attendance card before you leave.